Welcome to Forever Blue Shirts Radio.
Welcome, after a very long hiatus that really wasn't planned, to Forever Blue Shirts Radio. I am your temporary host, Kevin Krupe, the Space Earthbender. Along with me is who you just heard on that lovely intro video, Jean-Luc Shapiro. Jean-Luc, I will always mention that if I am hosting. I'm glad we're getting to do this. Russell, the host, the creator of 4B Radio, will be back during the Traverse City Tournament to discuss what's going on with all the prospects, Capo Caco, you know, Adam Fox, everybody, and how they're doing. So look, tune in 2 weeks, and then it'll be bi-weekly all again after that, and then everybody gets to be happy listening to the podcast.
And then, you know, Traverse City is pretty much the beginning of hockey season, so strap yourselves in.
Well, I mean,
in,
it's pretty chilly out, so I kind of feel like it's hockey season already. It's getting me excited.
Time to bust out the pumpkin spice lattes and the Halloween decorations, I guess.
No, that's too early. I'll take an iced coffee until it's 4 degrees out, okay. And then I'll switch to hot coffee.
That sounds about right.
I mean, I don't get the people who don't like iced coffee, regardless.
I don't like iced coffee, but just saying.
But, okay, why not? If it's hot, you want hot coffee?
Yes, I'll take hot coffee.
Okay, it's 98 degrees out. It's hot. And you want hot coffee?
Yes.
It's crazy.
I know. Anyways.
It's -2 degrees out, and you want hot coffee.
Yeah, sure.
You're crazy.
Yeah. Anyways, on to Ranger stuff.
Yes. Well, as we all know, it's not that busy in Rangerstown. This is what happens with our long drought of hockey in the summer months, but some other European leagues are starting to form up. They're having the preseason games. We're seeing some content here and there. We're seeing some picks start to show off who they really are, but I like to focus hometown right now, the players that are here. Brendan Lemieux and Tony D'Angelo still are not signed, along with a significant amount of RFAs and UFAs. I mean, it seems like, I don't know if anybody pays attention to baseball, but, you know, this past year and the year before where the free agents are holding out to the last second to try to get as much money as possible. But this isn't baseball. This is hockey, where the salary cap really dictates what your team is going to do. Are we going to have another William Nylander situation with Mitch Marner? I don't want that with Brendan Lemieux. I feel like his role is pretty solidified. He could be a fan favorite so easily. And if he could have a prove-it year or two, maybe, you know, part of the agreement will not be able to be exposed during the expansion draft would be good, but we'll see. It's just these guys being signed would be a lot better for the Rangers.
Well, see, excuse me, the thing about this that's confusing, or not confusing per se, but the thing that just kind of gets in the way is that a lot of teams don't seem to be as eager, and you also have to factor in that there's a lockout about to, you know, potentially loom over the league if the CBA isn't negotiated or they can't seem to come to terms. So a lot of teams are hesitant to try and give big contracts to players because what they'll have to do is lockout proof those contracts in a sense.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of stalemates and just the whole culture of free agency and, you know, putting teams together is starting to change, and you see it in baseball. Now you're seeing it in hockey. In the Rangers case, excuse me, in the Rangers' case, it's probably more of just that they don't have enough money for the time being for both those guys, and they're looking to try and probably move some other pieces in order to keep them, because they spoke highly of Lemieux last season, and they clearly traded Pionk for Trouba over D'Angelo, so obviously they want to keep him.
Well, D'Angelo had a great season last year. He's probably arguably the best defenseman statistically on the team.
Possession-wise,
he played a lot
too.
Of minutes. Possession-wise, he was great. He was really showed his, you know, his true form, and that's why the Rangers traded from Arizona, or from Arizona, so to speak. But, you know, that's the issue now. These guys have good ends of the year. You know, they're really, you know, in contract year. They're not arbitration eligible, so no one's going to give them a hard number to kind of base anything off of. So each camp has two different ideas. The Rangers like, hey, look, you're worth this much, and D'Angelo and Lemieux's camp like, no, I'm worth this much. So it's a battle this whole entire time.
Well, I think, too, it's just that players want security.
Oh, of course.
And teams are trying to do that, but they're also trying not to overspend, because I noticed that teams tend to feel buyer's remorse after a while, especially once the season starts, especially if a player doesn't produce. So, not to say that the Rangers would feel that way, with these guys, I honestly think that in the case of the New York Rangers, it's more of just like they really don't have enough space. I mean, the way that the offseason kind of is going towards the direction it's going in, it's kind of strange, especially after the Shattenkirk buyout. So it's really difficult to kind of read exactly what the Rangers are trying to do. And, you know, like we've always known, the Rangers keep things tight to the hip. They don't really say anything. So I know we had 4B had that exclusive piece with Claude Lemieux, who's his son's agent. And, it, you know, the way that Claude spoke about the talks with the Rangers, it seemed encouraging because, you know, it didn't seem like they were totally ruling out a return to the Rangers. But, you know, you have to wonder what exactly is going on. So, you know, it's just a strange time in the offseason right now.
But it's not like anybody else is doing this. It's not like no one is signing the RFAs all at once. You know, you're having teams with different situations, but they all kind of look the same. It's like, okay, Toronto, we don't have enough money. That's just a fact. They just don't have enough money, and they have a lot of free agents to sign. That's why you see these huge deals with the Avalanche, shipping off a lot of money, getting guys that are, you know, a little less pricey. But, you know, the Rangers really can't do that. They don't have somebody they could really ship off for anything valuable, you know. Nemesikov, his name was thrown around, Ryan Strome's name is thrown around, but then you really have a hard time filling out the roster. And, you know, do you want a team of all rookies? No, but it's just you look at next year, and this is the biggest thing. You look at next year's kind of free agency situation with the Rangers, they have a whole line and a half missing for their forward group.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Kreider, Jesper Faust, Vlad Nemesikov, Ryan Strome. I mean, if you really want to, you could throw Matt Bolesky in there, but I'm not. I don't care about Matt.
Well, one thing you have. One thing.
Regardless, it's a lot of guys coming off the cap, but you have the Shattenkirk buyout that really handcuffs them because that's $6 million for nobody. It's a huge hit, but don't get me wrong. Like in 2 years, it won't be anything. But next year, especially with the expansion draft looming the year after, it's huge. And you want to re-sign Faust. I mean, like, he's just a great clubhouse guy. You know, he plays great defensively. He plays a great third, fourth line. Scores when he needs to score. But, you know, do you re-sign him just to expose him? You have to expose somebody. Well, it's just, who do you really keep at that point?
Well, I think once that, you know, like you said, once those numbers get off the books, I really think the Rangers will try and have the younger guys pretty much step up to fill that, you know, the second line role.
Yeah.
Because if you really look at some of the guys that they just recently drafted, not to say that they're going to be ready in 2 years, but it seems that they can probably piecemeal their way back into getting players who can fill those roles. I made this statement a couple times on the podcast, I want to say a couple podcasts ago, and if you notice during the playoff run that the Rangers had, they would always sign these guys for cheap, pennies on the dollar, who would be like fourth-line contributors, like Elise Stepniak, like a Benoit Pouliot, you know, and
low-risk, high-reward. You know, Michael Grabner, guys
Michael
like that.
Michael Grabner, yeah. So I think what the Rangers are trying to do is they're trying to get some of those types of players for themselves who are cost-controllable, and it gives them enough money to put assets or spend more on assets for more vital parts of the team. So I think, frankly, you know, it's not as bleak as people put it out to be.
Well, it's I don't want to say it's bleak. Right now, the Rangers have a roster filled. If they really need to bring guys up, they can, which isn't the issue. It's just when you have so many pieces coming off at once, especially that are huge contributors to the Rangers, like, don't get me wrong, there's no way, unless you sign nobody else, that you can re-sign Chris Kreider next year. There's no way.
Absolutely.
This is the Rangers are keeping Chris Kreider for one of two reasons. One, because they're stupid and they're going to re-sign him to a huge contract extension that's going to kill him. Or two, they really want to protect the younger guys and have him be a second-line winger who's going to give Elias Anderson, Filippito, Brett Howden, you know, and even like Vitali Kratsov room to maneuver the pressure off the young guys. Have them excel at their own pace. So, then you see at the trade deadline, it's like, okay, we got to get rid of Kreider. Who else can we get rid of? Literally a chunk of the forwards. And then you have a whole team of younger guys, and then do you really say you can compete at that point? Do you have the pieces to compete? Do you think they make that much progress from October all the way to February? to call themselves a playoff team in the year after? Because that's what people were expecting. This year is not going to be a playoff run. There's a very slim chance, but a lot of things need to break right for it to happen. It's just, will they be playoff ready if they lose half their team?
Well, I think that all depends on where they finish sometime around December going into January, because you look at, let's look at the St. Louis Blues. St. Louis Blues
No. That's such an extreme case.
No, absolutely.
Like, I was going to make the point where, you know, you do have those scenarios where it's like, okay, the guys played, they're really expected to go high, like Tampa Bay. When they went to the playoffs, they're going to destroy the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, no,
they have no secondary scoring. They have no defense, this and that. But then they get swept. And then it's the same thing. You have so many sweeps, and no one thought the Canes were going to get that far. And it's just baffling. It's like, oh, this is just one of those years. It's not going to happen again.
No.
You're not going to see the Rangers get there. You're not going to see the Senators get there. You're not going to see Anaheim or the Kings get there. These are all rebuilding franchises.
Well,
The Blues were a competitive team that just so happened to put everything together and lucked out. They lucked out
in the second half
of the season.
No, I agree, but you can't totally dismiss it, because there have been teams who have been worse and have done a lot better. So you really, the problem with trying to make an accurate prediction is we don't know how the young guys are going to pan out. If the young guys end up actually producing to what they're supposed to produce quickly,
off the bat, and actually stay hot,
consistent.
All four main prospects coming right off the bat.
Yeah, and you know, it's not impossible, because it has been done before for the most part. I mean, you look at a lot of those older Detroit Red Wings teams, you know, they had a lot of those guys come right out of the gate and just start playing well. You know, you've got, Crosby, you have McDavid, you have Matthews. And I believe Kapokako is up in that category of those types of players, because he is second overall. So don't be surprised if you see Kapokako just come in and just start tearing it up.
Well, that's the thing. That's not what I'm worried about.
No, I'm
not worried about Kapokako. Kapokako looked great playing against, like, actual NHLers. The problem is everybody else. Vitaly Kratsov, even though he did produce a good chunk of percentage of his points for his team, like, how is he going to alter? How is he going to, adjust to this NHL ice? You look at Adam Fox coming from the NCAA. Typically, when players come from college hockey, it's a huge, speed change. Like, the bodies are a lot bigger, because you're not playing against 18-year-olds. You're not playing against 17, 18-year-olds. And, then you have, Elias Anderson and Filipino. Are they going to really pan out this year? Or maybe they're going to have more growing pains? Nobody knows. The only surefire thing are Artemi Panarin, Mika Zibanejad, and Jacob Trouba at this point. Those three guys.
Well, it's not exactly a bad thing, because if you look
at the way
the team was constructed last year, the one thing they were missing, and I said this to, I said this to everyone who's gone to a game with me. I said it to Russ when we went to a game one time. I said it to everyone that I've gone to a game with. The reason why the team was so bad last year was because they couldn't score. David Quinn has instilled in them a strong defensive system, and when they play it well, they can do well. They've played and beaten good teams. So once they, now with the additions of Kako, with Kratsov, with Panarin, and another weapon for Zibanejad to use, multiple weapons for him to use, I honestly think this team could actually make a mark and do well. They're not going to win the Stanley Cup. Let's face it.
They could do a lot better than most people think. Maybe.
But this is the thing.
Their scope is so wide right now. They could be a playoff team, or they could be a bottom five team. That's the issue with it. This is why it's so hard. It's not like, oh, fresh off a playoff run where we made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, we added blank and blank, and now we're ready to go. It's not like that. It's not like, oh, they're going to end up wild card to, first seed. This is wild card to last place.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily a bad
thing. Which is more than half the league.
Yeah. Which is not necessarily a bad
thing. No, it's not. But you have to look at it as it could be a bad thing. Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because if these guys don't mesh right away, what's to say they're going to not mesh the year after?
Like,
a big portion of their success is going to come off of how well they become. They're not an established team. They have no identity.
They're
half forwards are new.
I have to disagree with that.
Half of them are under the age of 24.
if they don't mesh well the first season, I don't necessarily think it's doom and gloom. I think that's just
no, but it's a big deal. It's okay. Let me read off the age group, the ages for forwards. I'm not gonna give any names. 27, 26, 28, 26, 24, 26. I'm skipping this one because Matt Bolesky doesn't count. 27, 18, 19, 20, 21, 27, 25, 23. And I guarantee two of those guys aren't going to be on the roster either.
Well, you have to remember, you know, it takes, you know, guys develop. And sometimes things aren't just going to happen right off the bat. So,
But that's the thing. Like, you say they could do playoff push, which means they have to kind of win right off the bat.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
If you have a shot to your confidence at a young team right away, you're really not going to climb out of that hole. Unless they make an unreal run like the Blues did, where you have guys fighting at practice, and then after that you go on a legendary run to win. That was it. That was the marking point. Guys, you got to stop fighting each other. You got to start winning games.
No, I don't see it as impossible. It's just, again, it's really hard for us to make a determination. And I personally don't think they'll have a problem clicking. I think, you know, Zibanejad was able to play with anyone he was put with. Like, the one example I like to cite, and this isn't a knock on Jesper Fast per se, but Zibanejad seems to be turning into the guy that can elevate other people's games, and Panarin is also that kind of guy to do that. So when they put, I think it was Kreider, Fast, and Fast was looking so good. And I know JT was happy about that. He was scoring goals, and he was looking good on the first line, and I thought, wow, this is nice. And then I think Buchnevich got back into the fold, and they started tearing it up again, and Fast went back down to the fourth line, or he got injured or something. I'm trying to remember.
Well, no, I remember that little stretch where Fast was there when Buch wasn't. Yeah. And we're like, why isn't Fast on this line all the time?
He's playing exactly.
Great. And it just added to his value, but you're right. That's a great example of generally third, fourth line player, and Fast is... It does well with a guy like Zibanejad, means he'll do well for both Artemi Panarin and Kapokako.
Exactly. So which is most likely the first line. Would look.
That's what I'm excited for the most. I mean, like, I'm not expecting a huge run. I'm not expecting a wild card push at all. I'm expecting them to sell at the deadline like they did last year, and I'm expecting them to just be as competitive as possible. They're not going to fold over. They're going to have a lot of close games, but the defense might, you know, not bail them out when they should, or Henrik Lundqvist might show his age.
For me, it's the best case scenario, wild card, worst case scenario, they get a good pick in next year's draft, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not, because then you could use all the picks that you could amass during the trade deadline. Mm-hmm, and Kreider will fetch it first. Voss, you could see something like Michael Grebner, somewhat. Mm-hmm. You could see like a second or two, or maybe a good prospect. I mean, it really depends. I mean, like, you could even make the point that Brendan Smith might have a good year to a certain extent if he's playing with them, which we believe that's going to happen?
No, I think there's been no
indication otherwise. But
he's going to get buried in Hartford.
Doesn't he have a no movement clause, though?
I want to say
I'm going to check right now.
Yeah, check on that. We don't want to be inaccurate.
Oh, no. Modified no trade clause, which means he can be moved.
Well,
he can get
sent down to Hartford because they sent him down to Hartford two seasons ago. So that's not the problem. It all depends on the teams that he might want to get traded to. So they would have to come to him and ask for a team list.
This is the thing. Like, when I was researching Adam Fox a couple weeks ago just for an article, I was looking at the best defensive scoring, you know, defenseman in the NHL. And one of them was Brendan Smith. And I'm looking at that, and I'm like, huh, he had great potential. He wasn't one of the top, he was like top, like 10, maybe. Like, but the amount of points he amassed for his team, I was like, oh, this is pretty good for Brendan Smith. Where did this scoring touch go? And, you know, we saw how gritty and, you know, stay-at-home defenseman he was when we first traded for him from the Red Wings. The last playoff push, but what really changed in his demeanor, what changed in his play style that kind of he lost that flair? Like, maybe it was the pairings, maybe he wasn't 100%, you know, injury-wise, but I'm going to get burned for this. I already know it because I hate myself when I'm about to say it. Let's not give up on Brendan Smith yet, because why not? We have a season that's going to get burned away anyway. There's a good chance they might not make the playoffs.
You know what? I'm not prone to disagree with you because, you know what?
Right? I mean, like, he still has an opportunity. Like, It really, it's on him now.
You want to know what was interesting?
He is the master of his fate.
Yeah, I agree. And you want to know what was interesting about Brendan Smith was last season in the fourth line forward role that he played, he actually wasn't half bad. He actually wasn't. I kid you not. It was the strangest thing to see. Brendan Smith skating around as a fourth line forward on the ice.
And I think I was tuning out at that point when I was watching him. I was like, what? Why is he joining the rush?
I think he scored. I want to say he scored.
I think he got like an assist or something.
In the final game of the season, but there were a couple times where I think it was one goal.
Now I have to look this up.
He skated down the wing and he wristed a shot on net and it went in. And I'm saying to myself, well, you know, this guy looks pretty good. I think what his problem is that he got too complacent. And I'm not trying to throw stones or make assumptions or whatever, but just judging off of the way he played in the playoffs in 2017 when they traded for him, and he was a horse. I mean, him and Brady Shea were arguably...
They were great. They were great together. I thought this was going to be the start to something amazing.
I mean, you had...
Oh, my God. He did score.
Yeah, he did.
In the first period, it tied it up 1-1.
Yes. And the reason why I remember that, Brendan Smith got
us Capo Caco.
Yes. And so did Ryan Strome. Yes. So did Ryan
Strome. With him and his high shooting percentage.
Yeah. So, but the point I'm trying to make is that he got the contract, and apparently he came to camp 25 pounds overweight, and it seemed like he was, it was around, you know, when they were just going through the transition period, and AV wasn't really doing things right, and it just was like a bad fit for everyone, so that didn't necessarily help things. But then, when David Quinn came in, you could see kind of a change in style, but he still wasn't as good defensively as a defenseman, but you could tell there was some sort of complacency after he got his contract. So I think there's two things
that I would like to make point. Yes, that seems to happen a lot, where a guy gets a big contract that he really wasn't expecting to get, and he's like, oh, I'm good, I got all of that I wanted, I'm fine, which means he doesn't have to compete. That's what it was. He was on a contract year, like you said, so he's gonna play his heart out, and now he's like, oh, I'm just not gonna get injured, I'll be fine. Which is, I'm a little worried about Artemi Panarin, but he seems like he always wants to win, so I'm fine with that.
But you
got to think of it this way. That year, Kevin Shattenkirk was battling injuries for a long time before he really admitted
it.
Pretty much the whole season. Yeah. So, you know, when Kevin Shattenkirk isn't doing well, he's going to be like, okay, Brendan, step up. You're going to have to play 22 minutes a game, which probably wasn't a problem for him during the playoffs because, you know, you're in adrenaline and you're playing for a playoff team and everything's crazier. And, you know, they didn't really go that far. They lost in the second round? Yeah? They lost in the second round.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what happens. It's coupled with the fact that he had to play more minutes and he was becoming complacent. But now he's on the hot seat. Now everybody's like, screw Brendan Smith. We need to get rid of Brendan Smith. He's like, I want to stay in New York. I like New York. I have a da-da-da-da-da here. He has 2 more years of his contract.
Oof.
It's not a team-friendly contract.
Oof.
For a player of his caliber. It's just so annoying. If he was a random guy, like from some random league, it's like, oh, he's 24 and we're going to sign him from Russia. It's a little bit different than a stay-at-home, American-bred college defenseman that seems like they would pan out eventually.
Well, the funny part about Brendan Smith is that he has such a... He's a gritty, tough guy. The one thing about him was that he just could never keep up with the speed. And I think he was able to get away with a lot of that because he had Brady Shea with him. You know, there's a reason why the Detroit Red Wings dumped him. And that's not to say that he's a completely terrible player, because let's be real, there is a lot of defensemen out there that Brendan Smith is better than. And though a lot of those bad defensemen are starting on some of NHL teams. So let's not get too ahead of ourselves here. But, you know, when Brendan Smith was the Detroit Red Wing, he was a kind of an offensive defenseman, kind of gritty, you know, and then when he got traded to the Rangers, he kind of had a lot of his, to say, defects counteracted because Brady Shea was just so fast and Brady Shea was playing very well. So, you know, that kind of masked it. It's kind of like similar what happened with Stahl and Stroman. Stroman really picked up a lot for what Mark Stahl was not doing.
Especially during his injury, so we really didn't see it right away.
Yeah, so I think now what's happening is that Brendan Smith doesn't really have anyone to really like count on or rely on, and the contract itself is supposed to be for a guy who can do it on his own, and that's the sucky part. But that being said, like you said, Brendan Smith can still be serviceable. In what way? Well, you could continue to use him as a fourth line player. I would absolutely love to see Smith and
not that
Lemieux
I have a problem with that.
Throw bodies on the
Yeah, no, I don't have any problem with that. He wants to see, that's the thing. He's gonna be the best defensive forward there.
Yeah.
Even though he's the worst defenseman on the team.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's gonna kill penalties regardless. It's just, do you want to take away a fourth line spot for guys that have been there before?
Well, that all depends on how those other guys perform too. See, that's the thing with this.
This is the issue, though. Like, we still need two guys that are essential to the core of the team signed, but you're not going to get any more cap space. There's no more cap space. I don't know what Jeff Gordon is doing. I don't know why he wants to keep Vlad Nemestikov, because his cap is just killing the team right now. Just, they need to get rid of him. And obviously, he hasn't gotten a good offer. It's like, hey, I'll take a third and a fourth round pick for Vlad Nemestikov. He seemed like an add-in at the end of the trade anyway to make it a little bit better.
Yeah. I think the reason why they're valuing
him as a good player?
I think the reason why they're keeping a lot of these guys goes along with what they said once the rebuild started, was that they weren't just going to throw a bunch of young guys out there. And it's honestly a good sentiment, because, you know, you have guys like, you know, Kratsov coming in. Like, who on that team can help him out? Panarin, Nemestikov, Kreider. You know, these guys can help them out. So, Kako, Anderson, pretty much everyone else on the team that's a veteran can help them out. You know, Fast. So, I don't, you know, just taking a team like what Toronto did and just gutting all the veterans doesn't help. So, I think that's the reason why they're keeping Nemestikov. And let's be honest here. We rag on Nemestikov for not being the player that he was in Tampa Bay, but, you know.
Well, but this is the thing. Like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, JT Miller and Vlad Nemestikov have the same amount of points, same amount of ice time, they're the same player. No.
No, they're not.
No, they're not.
They're not.
If you have a center in Steven Stamkos, you're going to have a lot more points.
But here's the thing about that, though.
On a team, like a juggernaut offense team, though.
Here's the thing about that, though. I think Nemestikov has more value, because Nemestikov performed well with Stamkos in the playoffs, too, for the most part, if I'm correct. Or just the body of work that Nemestikov was able to have with Miller. He was going to have, like Miller had with Stamkos. Obviously, it shows that all three of those guys had chemistry. So JT Miller, who apparently is supposed to be the same type of player, did not do as well with those three guys. So clearly, the Rangers see Nemestikov as some kind of valued player. Now, who knows how the Rangers are going to re-sign these two guys without moving Nemestikov? Either way, I don't know. But Nemestikov was kept here for the sole purpose that they want to use him for next season. And that's just my opinion on it, honestly.
I mean, it's just versatile player. It's just, but he's not worth $4 million.
No, I don't think
he's not. Like, I as much as like people want to argue, it's like, oh, Ryan Strom, he scores on a very high percentage of his shots, and it's just because he doesn't take enough shots.
But
it's like it's a false positive type of situation. But I still like Ryan Strom better than I like Vlad Nemestikov.
Well, Ryan Strom fits a need the team has.
This is the thing, like, Ryan Strome was a highly touted prospect at one point and got bounced around so much, and then he's got put on the dumpster fire that is Edmonton, and you expect him to score?
No.
No, you don't. Like, I don't know why Connor McDavid signed that contract with the Edmonton Oilers. To be honest, what I was saying, I was like, I'm going to wait till my ELC is up, and then I'm going to leave. They made the playoffs one time on the first round.
Well, to mention Strome, my thing is, I thought that was a very good trade.
I thought it was a great trade.
I like him here. I don't understand why people are so adamant against Strom, because if you think about it, Ryan Strom is, one, the reason why we got Kaapo Kakko, And two...
You're right. That is the number one reason.
Yeah,
well, it has nothing to do with the rest of the team being
terrible. No, obviously not. I mean, his overtime goal, you know, put the Rangers
in position. No, that's the reason they got the odds and just
sort of
work out.
So,
but it's not like Jeff Gordon bribed Gary Bettman and saying, look, I'm bringing Stephen Fowler to
edge. Well, if you don't some do people this, we know tend to believe otherwise. But another thing, too, is that he brought stability to a team that really didn't have much depth down the middle. And they still don't. But, you know...
He's still a solid veteran.
I think so. And honestly, I'll be real with you. If his contract runs up and the Rangers need a guy to fill out a spot that's a veteran, I wouldn't be opposed to signing Strom.
And he's an RFA, too.
Yeah, and he's an RFA.
That's the best part about it. He's arbitration eligible as an RFA, so you really can get something done. The only issue is he's already owed $3.1 million, so it's only going to go up from there. Obviously. But, I mean, like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I wouldn't rule out bringing him back in some kind of capacity, whether it's either a similar contract or if there's enough space to bring him back. I wouldn't rule it out.
No, a third-line winger or center is a perfect role for him.
Exactly.
And, like, you know, would you mind 30 to 40 points from a guy at that spot?
That's perfect. That's what you want. That's what you want.
Like, he got 33 points in 63 games for the Rangers last year.
That's pretty good for a team that was supposed to be terror bad. Yeah.
Like, think of I think there was only, like, three players that had a plus for the season. He had a minus two.
Mm-hmm.
Which, on a team that came in the bottom five of the league...
That's pretty good.
That's amazing. That's unbelievable. That's very impressive, and it goes to show how valuable he is on the penalty kill, because he can play defensive. It's just, this is the issue. So many people look at one... Is he not producing for me? Why not? He's terrible. It's the same crap. That's what it is.
So,
but you know, it's just good to, you know, have stability in the lineup, especially with the younger guys. This guy's been around the block. He's not that old. I think he's only 26.
26? Goodness gracious, he's my age. Goodness.
Yeah, no, I think he just turned 26.
Yeah, he's my age.
So yeah, July 11th, I checked. Thank you, Hockey Reference.
Yes,
thank you. For all my stats.
Thank you.
I mean, they needed an applause. I mean, I don't want to pay them or anything, but it's just they really do, like, make my job a lot easier. So I'm not going back to all those games, like, 4 years ago. It's like, Ryan Strom scored against who on this game? I'm
Ryan Strom scored against Henrik Lundqvist.
But anyway, I mean, really not much to talk about today. Just good to... gauge where the present situation is, kind of on one topic. Not bad. If you enjoyed it, please like, comment, let us know what we're doing wrong so it makes your experience better.
Yes.
If you like me and JL, great. If you like me, JL, and Russell, great. If you don't like me at all, that's great too. I'll stop doing this.
No.
I'm not going to stop doing this. So, tough luck. JL, any final thoughts?
How about this?
Very early prediction on the top six forwards.
Man. Panarin, Zibanejad, Kapokako.
Yep.
Kreider, Hedl,
and Kravtsov.
Yes.
Interesting.
I think Hedl will thrive with a good winger. I think Kravtsov is that winger. So
That's interesting. I kinda like that. I was actually going to push those guys down to the third line and make a very interesting line of Hedl, Anderson, and Kravtsov. I don't know why I think that would be amazing, but I just do.
Kravtsov seems like the kind of guy that plays well when he's put out on the ice more. I think he's that kind of guy. I think once he's kind of the guy that, to me, kind of resembles a little bit of Alexei Kovalev, where as long as he's on the ice more, something's
bad. Yeah, no, because he's that kind of gritty player that'll get in the dirty areas and score, and he's got a wicked shot.
Goodness, you put him with Chris Kreider, who can do more of the dirty work, all Hedl has to do is sit in the middle.
I want to end my note on this.
Go ahead.
I don't want Chris Kreider to be gone. I love Chris Kreider. I don't love the fact that he's 28 and he's going to want a 5-year contract. I am not about that. If we were a completely different team, if we were a team 3 years ago where everybody's ready to go and ready to make a playoff push, then sure, let's sign him to a 5-year contract and then cry about it now. But you just can't justify keeping this guy.
No.
You can't. Unless he takes an unbelievably team-friendly deal for 3 years, you know, around what he's making now, you can't justify it. No. He's going to want more. You're going to have to trade him at the deadline. I love Chris Kreider. I think he's a great presence. He's a great, you know, addition on the ice. It's just, you got to compare him to Milan Lucic, Rick Nash, guys of those, the power forward caliber. They don't last past 31. And if they do, they're fourth line players at best. Mm-hmm. But anyway, hey, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. If you do listen, again, like, comment, you know, retweet. Check out our other content on foreverblueshirts.com. You have our Twitter, Facebook, all the same, 4B, Forever Blue Shirts, and 4B Radio.
And be sure to keep an eye on our Traverse City Tournament podcast. Russell will be back, and we're definitely going to get our bi-weekly schedule going again.
And look for a new segment that I proposed today, and Ant actually liked it a lot, was Stat Boy Stevens Speculations. The alliteration there is just unmatched. And he loved it. Both of them was like, let's see what Ant says. And Ant was like, I love it. So he's got all the European prospects for you. He's the greatest insider, I think, ever. And he's such a nice guy.
Yep.
But this is it. I'm going to stop talking now. Enjoy your week. And let's go Rangers.